Smell the flowers. Now this is marvelous.
And we're ready to begin again.
And I wore my button. I thought, I'll just wear it. Maybe I'll do some good.
This is a Reagan.
Reagan button. No, I'll wear it. It'll do some good. Now, this was 2 days before election that I went. You have no idea the number of people who stopped me on the street to talk to me about the election. They evidently thought that I knew something that they didn't know, and they were groping. They wanted to know who they should vote for, and they would stop me to talk. In fact, I had two very interesting experiences. I happened to be up in an area which is quite a poor area and very mostly a black area. And there was a whole busload of children waiting for bus where I was waiting. And you have no idea how many of these children came up to me because they thought that Reagan was not getting the black vote. The children came up to me and said, are you going to vote for Reagan? And I said, I have already voted for Reagan. Well, so are my parents.
That is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Then I had a funny experience. I was waiting for a crosstown bus to go home, to go to George's. And it was a big crowd waiting. Evidently, the bus had been held up. When it came, there were a lot of people getting off. One man was carrying a big square flat package, looked like it might be a picture or a poster or something like that. And he looks down, he saw me, and he said, let the girl with the Reagan button on. And he takes this thing, this package, and turns around to the people in the bus, swings them. Anybody who doesn't vote for Reagan's crazy. Got off the bus.
It's in New York.
In New York.
Yes.
Who's interesting?
Yes.
They call me all the time to do things, you know, for headquarters, but I haven't been able to. I will.
Along the same lines of politics and world situations, can you tell us about the Depression? Were you affected?
Oh, my, yes. That's when I went in business. We were very much affected. It was a very, very terrible situation.
Now, your husband was injured as well.
Yes.
And you had a child.
He was injured during the Depression, yes. Yeah. That was when I went into business. Before I started my business, I was with the... for a very short time, London Guarantee and Accident Insurance Company in their credit insurance department.
Wasn't it unusual that they would hire?
Yes, yes. There never had been a woman in the credit insurance business before. But I had to give that up because it kept me away from home too much. So I gave that up and confined myself. Business, which I enjoyed very much.
But even though it was a struggle, you didn't have to lose a home or anything of that sort,
no,
did you?
No,
but you did.
No.
It did affect your...
Oh, my, yes.
Mm-hmm. Was your lifestyle changed?
Well, yes, I...
What I'm driving at is how would the Depression affect you is what I'm getting at.
Well, we didn't have as much money to spend. I mean, many of our securities weren't paying, and some never did pay again, and things of that sort. And when you depend upon income, it can hit you.
And in as much as your father had been in the distillery business, I'm sure that the Prohibition situation affected your family.
Yes, very, very much. Very much.
As far as your business life, you told us that you were employed at the London Guarantee.
Yes.
And you also had a business of your own.
Yes.
Is there anything else we can add to to this? How did you know to go into the gift shop business, and how did you know
I had always been interested. I had always been interested. It was even as when I was a youngster, a friend of my mother's used to have a gift shop, and I was always hanging around there because I enjoyed it. And of course, I have a great love for beautiful things and that. And well, actually, how I started in that business. Knitting was quite the vogue then, and I had been doing a lot of knitting. And while Albert, I guess it was right after he got home from the hospital, I was knitting a suit, and a friend of my mother said to me, "Why don't you take orders?" And she said, I'll give you the first order, which she did, and I made a suit for her daughter-in-law. And I made several, and then I thought to myself, maybe if I can do this, if I could locate lines of unusual yarns, I could sell them and give people the instruction, which I did. And was kept very busy that way. And one day, another friend of my mother's came in. She had been in Atlantic City, and at that time they used to have wonderful shops there. And she had brought some little blown glass things. They were finger bowl floaters. And she just put a few boxes of them on the buffet in the dining room, and she said to me, "You know, if you can sell yarn, I bet you could sell these too." Well, in no time, people came in and they were grabbed up. And she got the address where they came from, and I had sent for more. So I thought, well, if I could get other stuff, I probably could work up a business. And I took some money out of my bank account, very little, and went to New York, and I was even afraid to spend all I had taken, and I bought other things, and one thing led to another, and I just grew and grew, and had people from all over as my customers, not people that I knew. I never solicited a friend. I used to send out mailing, but never to anyone that I knew unless they had been a customer. Then I would send them a mail, otherwise no.
And this was in your home?
Yes.
Very enterprising.
I had a few things that you see around were from my shop.
Let's talk a little bit about your child, your son George.
Oh, I'm glad to.
And we all?
Now, he grew up in the city, and he went to Brown University.
Yes.
And now
he lives in New York.
Is he married?
No, damn him, I wish he were, but I'm giving up hope. But he's very happy,
Is he working in New York?
Yeah. Oh, yes. When he first went to New York, he was with the Revlon for a number of years. And then he felt he had gotten as far with them as he could, and he got out, and he was he was with L'Oreal for a while, and then he was the managing director of the Givenchy articles until they sold out to a drug house, and he knew, being an executive, that there wouldn't be a place for him, and he resigned. And then he went with Vitabath, and the same thing happened. So he decided that he had had it with the cosmetic industry because he didn't want these things happening to him all the time. Now, once in a while, if somebody wants to bring out a fine line of perfume, that he'll do it for them, just Because he enjoys doing it, but that is not his field anymore.
Can you contrast the way you were raised with the way you raised him? Was there a...
No, I can't. Naturally, you're influenced by the way you were raised, and you try to do the same things or improve upon them if you can. But you have to keep up with changes, which we tried to do. We tried to give him every advantage that we could. It was a difficult childhood for George. I mean, I'm very proud of him that he is the kind of person that he is. He's a very, very compassionate person and understanding, I suppose, partly because of his childhood, but I think he might have been otherwise. But it was difficult.
But he had much of the same advantages that you had. He was an only child.
We tried to give him every advantage that we could give him. We tried to. He went to summer camp, and we took him on trips. When he was in college, one summer he went to California with a friend from here. And another summer he went to Europe with two friends from college. We tried to give him advantages. I hope we succeeded.
Sure,
you'd have
you
to
did.
Ask him mm-hmm. to know that.
What is he doing now?
He's now in commodities. Mm-hmm. He seems to be one who always picks out tough lines.
You still belong to Rosh Sholem?
Yes.
And your religious observances are pretty much
such
the same
as they
are, always
such
were.
As they are. No, I don't think I'm as much as I used to be. I mean, if going to services means being religious, I don't go as much as I used to.
Now, your social context and your social life, was your family at all involved in the Concordia Club?
Oh, yes.
Can we hear a little bit about
that? Oh, yes. My grandfather was a member of the Concordia Club, and
was he a founding member or anything? Or
No, he was just a member. One of the original members, but not a founding member.
Not
as far as I know.
I see.
My father joined when he was 21. Albert joined when he was 21. George joined when he was 21, and my second husband, Dr. Goldstein, joined when he married me. And I'm still a member.
And any other clubs that you belong to?
Yes, my father was one of the original younger, junior members of Westmoreland. And Albert joined Westmoreland when he was 21. I resigned from there after he was hurt, and I knew that we weren't going to be able to use it. And then when I was married to Dr. Goldstein, he was a member of Westmoreland and remained so until about 2 years before he passed away, when he wasn't able to get out there anymore, and he had stayed in for a year and thought that I would go out, but I never went out without him. So he said he was going to resign, and later on, if I wanted to go back in, I could, but I haven't found the need of that.
Let's pick up your life then when your first husband died.
Yes.
He was in his 50s, you say.
Yes.
And you were, of course, younger than that.
Yes. Yes.
And then you were a widow for...
I was a widow for 6 years. Not quite 6 years. And in the meantime, I met someone and was going to remarry. He was a New York man who had moved to Florida. And I was down there for a month and came back to get my affairs in order, and we were going to be married, and I was home 1 week when he dropped dead. And then after that, Dr. Sam Goldstein, and we were married.
And you were married to Dr. Goldstein for how long? You know what year?
16 years.
Oh, really?
16 years when he died.
See. And he died when?
In 78.
In 1978.
Yes, we were married in 62.
Married. And during your marriage, Dr. Goldstein, that you sold your house and...
I sold my house, yes, when I married him.
And then you moved to this present apartment?
Yes, yes.
I see. So you've been here...
I've been here since January 62.
How can you contrast Pittsburgh today with Pittsburgh yesterday? It seems like I've asked this in other ways before. Socially, let's say, or culturally.
Well, I think culturally it has expanded very much. I think largely because it has become an educational center. The various places of learning have expanded so, and with that, I think that the cultural interests have expanded. However, Pittsburgh was never as lacking in culture as people would have you think that it was. For many years, there was not a symphony, but there had been a symphony before that, because when I was a very, very young child, I remember my parents going to the symphony concerts. Then that was disbanded, and there were a number of years when there was none. Then when they started the symphony again, I don't know if you know it, it was all volunteer.
You mean the musicians?
The musicians volunteered their services. The conductor volunteered. Everything was volunteer. And they played on Sunday evenings. And it was by invitation. And Albert, who had always been interested in music, and knew Eddie Spector from the university, and Eddie Spector was the first manager, and invited Albert to the concert, so that we went to the concert before the tickets were even sold.
Do you recall who the conductor was?
Elias Briskin, who was the conductor of the... This is interesting. The Lowe's Pan was the original volunteer conductor.
And then, so they work without any salary?
Without any salary. Mm-hmm. And so that, you see, there had been that. Then there were the May Beagle concerts for years and years. I wish they were back, where soloists came. And then there was the Art Society, to which my parents belonged. They had concerts. And there was always the International at Carnegie. And this was, they had their Founders Day, which was by invitation, the opening. And so that there was more culture here than Pittsburgh was ever given credit for.
These May Beagle concerts, can you tell us a little bit about those? Where were they?
First in Carnegie Music Hall, and then later at the mosque, at Syria Mosque.
Mm-hmm. I can
recall. And you know that people wouldn't go to concerts. Oh, they would, some did. But most people, particularly if you sat on the first floor, were in evening clubs. Not like now that they go in any.
That's when the Shenley Hotel was a lovely hotel, and they could have dinner there. Is that correct?
Well, or they just go.
And at that time,
most people who had cars had chauffeurs who drove.
How would you contrast Pittsburgh today with yesterday politically?
Well, of course, years ago there was a two-party system. Today there hasn't been for a long time.
A concise end. That's very good. Mm-hmm. How about environmentally?
Well, naturally, with the smoke control and that, and lying of smoke, there's that's better. We wish we had more of it. I often tell a story that during the Depression, the daughter and son-in-law of first cousin of my mother's, who lived in New York, he lost his business in New York and was given a very good position in Pittsburgh, and they moved to Pittsburgh. Her father, who lived with them, moved with them, and he was constantly complaining about the smoke and the dirty Pittsburgh and all that. And finally, my mother said to him, "You know, don't complain about the dirt in Pittsburgh. If Pittsburgh had been dirtier, you wouldn't have to be living here." And that is your answer to the environment.
How do you view your accomplishments, your successes? And
I don't think I've had any accomplishments.
You had a business when you had to, and you brought up a son under some...
Well, you do the things that you have to do, don't you?
Well, some do it better than others.
Well, I'd have to leave that to somebody else, how well I did it. I can only say that I did it.
I know you have traveled a great deal. Would you like to tell us, can you tell us about some of your travels?
Well, now, where would you like to hear about?
When did you begin
this
traveling?
I've been on every continent.
When did you start traveling?
Well, as I say, we've always taken trips.
Yes.
I would say that the first long trip that I took was in, I guess it was 49. Yes. Albert and I went to South America.
In other words, you could travel with your husband even though
later,
he was ill.
Later, for a while he couldn't. Then he could take short trips, and then he finally worked himself up that he could take this long trip. So we went to South America. And I guess that was our first long trip, because I remember when we came back and some friends were over and asking us about the trip and asked, you know, about prices and that. We were told, so telling them that in a very surprised tone of voice, she said, "Well, it was so expensive, you could have gone to Europe." So we said, "Well, did anybody say we couldn't? We could have, but we wanted to go to South America." Then just the spring before he passed away, thank goodness, we went to Europe.
Now, your first trip was to South America in about 1940. And where did you go?
Well, the East Coast. We took a ship from New York to Rio. Rio was our first stop, and then we went as far south as Buenos Aires. And
how long a trip was that?
I would say about 2.5.
George did not accompany you.
George was in college.
And then the second trip you made with Albert?
Was in 1955, the spring of 55.
And where did you go then?
We went to Europe and did the grand tour.
And how long a trip was that?
That was about 2 months. And unfortunately, he passed away. Then after, while I was alone, I went on, you know, cruises and things like that. And then in 1960, I was gone for 3.5 months, I went around the world. And it was was a marvelous, marvelous trip. I got to places that I haven't heard of other people getting to.
Now, how did you happen to go on this trip around the world?
This man that I was going to marry dropped dead, as I told you, and I was very upset. And the evening that I got the message that he had passed away, an acquaintance came in. She wanted to look at my house. I was going to sell my house. And she immediately, she could tell that something was wrong, and she said, "I don't know what's wrong. I can tell that something is wrong with you, and I'm not going to look at your house this evening." And so I told her what happened, and I said, I'm going tomorrow to New York. And she said, "Well, when you come back." Well, of course, when I came back, I didn't want to sell the house, but she asked me to go someplace with her, just to be nice to me. She was just an acquaintance, and we went a couple places together, and one day she said to me, "Would you be interested in a trip around the world?" And I said, "I haven't thought about it, but I might be." "Well," she said, "I'd like one. I'd like to take one, and I think you'd be a nice traveling companion." So we made our plans, and we went, and it was just the most marvelous trip.
Can we have her name?
Yes, it's Mrs. Curtis Lefkowitz, Lily Lefkowitz. She lives at the...
Yeah, she's a member of Rhoda Sholem.
Yes, and she lives at the Kenmore Apartments.
Which apartment?
Kenmore.
Kenmore. Mm-hmm. So you took a trip around the world?
Yes. And it was just...
What are some of the places you touched on that you think are so unusual?
Well, do you know many people who are in Cambodia? And in Vietnam? And in that time you didn't hear too many people in Taiwan?
I hope you kept a diary.
No, my diary's all in my head. What I can't remember, I don't have.
And was Vietnam a very beautiful country, I would say?
Yes. Beautiful. Saigon was one of the loveliest cities I've ever been in.
Did you have a guide?
We had an escort. Oh, and you didn't hear too many people then going to Egypt. Particularly not then. And then at that, the trip was going to the Middle East and to Israel. First they told me that first they said we could go because we were on a trip. Then they said we couldn't go because Middle East, we couldn't get into the Middle East. Then they said that they could get me in because of the name Davis, but of course Lefkowitz, they couldn't get in. And I said, well, I wouldn't go in under any false colors, and I wouldn't leave her anyhow. So that was the way it stood, and we traveled with them as far as Cairo. Then we spent some extra time in Cairo. They left and went to the Middle East. Pardon me. We went to Cyprus, and then we went to Israel ahead of them, and they came into Israel through the Mount Gate, and we finished Israel with them. It really was one of the finest trips that I have ever had.